Hello, it's Friday, June the 18th. I'm Andrew Pearce, and this is the Andrew Pearce Show coming from the Daily Mail newsroom. What's going on at Waitrose? Has it become Wokrose? They're renaming brands because some people think they might cause offence. England versus Scotland in the Euros. Which side are you backing? Finally, we might be going abroad with a double vaccination. Amber countries, it seems, could become almost green. But what if you're under 18 and haven't had a jab? Wales, they're cancelling their Freedom Day too, but there's a sign that England's Freedom Day may come a little earlier than we thought. But first, a stunning Lib Dem by-election victory in Chesham and Amersham, their best result in a by-election since 1974. They didn't hold that seat they won in 1974 at the general election just a few weeks later. Will history repeat itself? So a stunning by-election result for the Liberal Democrats, unexpected according to the Conservatives and Labour, but the Liberals were pretty confident they were going to win the Chesham and Amersham by-election, their best result in a by-election since 1974. So is the Conservative red wall, in blue wall I should say, in the home counties beginning to crumble? Lib Dem leader Ed Davey couldn't resist a dig at the Tories by taking a Lib Dem hammer to a plastic ball wall, which he promptly disintegrated after that extraordinary result. Daisy Cooper joins me now. She's the deputy leader of the Lib Dems. A great result. Congratulations. I note the candidate, who is now the MP for Chesham and Amersham, was vehemently opposed to HS2, which of course goes right through that beautiful Buckinghamshire constituency. That's not quite the position, though, of the Lib Dems, is it?
Well, let's be clear. This is, the HS2 is a Conservative government project, and nationally the Liberal Democrats support it. But you know, Sarah is independently minded, and just like the former Tory MP in that patch, she has said very clearly that had she have had a vote on HS2, she would have voted against. But she's now speaking up for residents who have real concerns about the way that the government is proceeding with this project, because local residents have said time and time again that they feel as though information isn't being divulged. They feel as though they haven't been consulted. They're asking questions about the impact on biodiversity locally, and they're not getting answers. And Sarah has pledged to be a strong, independent voice to put those questions to the government and give Chesham and Amersham the voice that they deserve.
Yeah, it's not going to stop HS2, though, is it? One MP joining the opposition.
Well, Sarah's been really clear. You know, had she had a vote, she would have voted against. But the government appears to be proceeding with HS2. But it is her role as a constituency MP, first and foremost, to serve her constituents. And she's been absolutely clear that she's going to speak up for them in terms of raising their concerns and making sure that they are properly consulted on the different stages of the development, getting answers about the impact on biodiversity, and making sure that there's far more transparency about the impacts on people living in her area.
Now, there wasn't much notice taken of it at the time, Daisy, but in those local elections where all attention was focused on the Tories' pretty extraordinary victory in Hartlepool, hanging on to the mayoralty in the West Midlands and in Teesside, but the Lib Dems had made some steady gains. Buckinghamshire, where, of course, you've just won this by-election, there were gains. Hertfordshire, Oxfordshire, Surrey, West Sussex, East Sussex. Is that a sign that slowly but surely you're clawing your way back locally, even if nationally you're doing pretty badly in the polls?
Yes, I think we are definitely building, and we're moving forward. And as I say, in the local elections very recently, just a few weeks ago, we did make some very important gains. You know, we now have an Oxfordshire County Councillor, the leader of Oxfordshire County Councillor is now a Liberal Democrat. The leader of Cambridgeshire County Council is now a Liberal Democrat. In Hertfordshire, where I am in St Albans, we now have more Liberal Democrat county councillors than we've ever had before. And so, as you say, right from Cambridgeshire through Buckinghamshire, Hertfordshire to Cambridgeshire, we've got this blue wall, which the Liberal Democrats are starting to chip away at, and we're making some serious inroads.
So great news for the Lib Dems, but I don't want to spoil on anyone's parade, but there was clearly tactical voting because the Labour vote was astonishingly bad, under 700 votes. I think probably one of Labour's worst ever by-election results. You benefited clearly from some tactical voting. How do you make that happen at a general election, Daisy Cooper?
Well, I mean, it happened here in St Albans when I was elected in 2019. The fact is that, you know, at the time we had a Conservative MP here. I was the sort of key challenger. I spent a lot of time talking to traditional Labour and Green voters. Some of them voted very positively for me and the Lib Dems because they realised that they shared our values. But there were many who decided to vote tactically. And I was very clear at the time that I wouldn't take those votes for granted. But at the same time, there were also a number of sort of traditional Conservative voters who, for various reasons, were fed up with either their party or the local MP at the time, and also decided to vote for me tactically last time. And that's precisely what I think we've just seen in Chesham and Amersham as well.
Sarah Green is the new MP for Chesham and Amersham. How do you work it for her that she holds on to that seat? Because, as you know, by-elections often, there's an upset, but come the general election, whoever's won that by-election, it goes back to normal at the general election. How do you stop that happening here?
Well, I've known Sarah for more than 10 years, and I can tell you she is a real grafter. And she actually came and helped with my campaign in 2019 here in St Albans. And I've got absolutely no doubt that she's going to work her socks off to represent people in Chesham and Amersham. I'm sure she'll be working incredibly hard. And hopefully, you know, as an incumbent, she will be able to show just how effective she can be as a constituency MP. And hopefully the voters of Chesham and Amersham will decide to re-elect her at the next possible opportunity.
All right, that's Daisy Cooper. She's the deputy leader of the Lib Dems and she's the Liberal Democrat MP for St Albans. Thanks for joining me. Visit mailplus.co.uk to listen to The Andrew Pearce Show for free and in full, along with our other podcasts and video series. Remember to tell your Alexa speaker to play Daily Mail News. The Welsh First Minister, Mark Drakeford, announced he will delay further easing of lockdown restrictions for 4 weeks after seeing what he says is a spike in cases of the Delta variant. This comes after Boris Johnson announced a similar delay in England. But Downing Street has now indicated it's open to ending the lockdown in England as early as the 5th of July, as new data suggests the modelling they used to cancel Freedom Day on June the 21st was overly pessimistic. Dr. Roland Salmon is the former regional epidemiologist for Wales and joins me now. Dr. Salmon, we've talked before. I suspect you're in sharp disagreement with the First Minister in Wales.
I'm afraid I am. I mean, I've never thought that lockdowns have delivered in the way that they were supposed to, even when the virus was more widespread than it is now. And I frankly don't understand the need for delaying the lifting of the restrictions. It's true that the actual rate of diagnoses has crept up in the last fortnight, but the number of hospital admissions and the number of intensive care admissions has remained pretty stable. And that's, I think, a tribute to a highly successful immunisation campaign that's been carried out here in Wales. I mean, the First Minister was busy telling us that Wales is lagging behind the rest of the United Kingdom. I think he could equally have said, and probably would have liked to have said, that this may be a sign that Wales is actually ahead of the rest of the United Kingdom.
The vaccine rollout has been this extraordinary success. Do you think, whether it's in Wales or whether it's in England or Scotland, that the prime ministers are just not giving back to the people the dividend that they should be able to reap from the successful vaccine rollout?
Yes, I do think that. I mean, all the evidence suggests that the vaccine works pretty much equally well against the different variants that have been identified. Yes, you can get slight differences in the levels of antibodies that you measure in people's bloodstreams, but when they actually look at whether people are getting sick or not after they've been vaccinated, the news has been almost entirely uniformly good. I think the other thing to bear in mind about the current, as some are calling it, third wave, though I don't think that's a very helpful term, the thing to bear in mind is this is almost entirely among younger people who substantially don't get seriously ill, and the symptoms that people seem to be reporting to the King's College Zoe study, amongst other things, resemble much more the sort of common colds that we traditionally associated with coronaviruses before this new one came along last year, rather than the more severe disease that we saw in mostly in older people last year and over the winter.
And the evidence, doesn't the evidence also show, Dr. Salmon, that people who are going into hospital are not being detained in hospital as long as people were in the first wave? And also, we know for a fact that the death rate is sharply lower, certainly in England and Wales and in Scotland, and currently would be, if you were comparing it with deaths from influenza, would be sharply lower.
I mean, to talk about deaths first, I mean, the death rate in Wales has been, according to the European Union Euromomo site, below the all causes below the expected average since the end of January. So in other words, there have been less deaths in Wales week on week than we would have normally expected since the end of January. The ONS tells broadly the same story. Now then, as for symptom severity, I'm afraid, Andrew, I actually don't know the answer to that question, though it wouldn't surprise me since the people who are getting the disease and are being admitted are that much younger, that actually they are doing rather better when they get to hospital.
What are the other impact of lockdown, Dr. Salmon? While many restrictions have been lifted, I was talking to people from the British Psychotherapist Society earlier this week who said they fear the impact of lockdown on people's mental health, that we'll still be feeling that for another 5 years. I was talking to a Conservative MP yesterday, Sir Charles Walker, who's famously talked about his own struggles with mental illness, and he thinks it will be far more severe and far longer. It will take possibly a decade to sort out the nation's mental health problems caused by this protracted lockdown.
I mean, I'm not the best qualified person to speak about this, but I've always been very conscious that this particular policy, focused as it was on one illness in one circumstance, was likely to bring with it a lot of collateral damage in terms of other health effects. Now, whether that's in the mental health of particularly younger people who've had a pretty awful year, really, because at the time when they're expecting to be able to go about and explore the world, they've been cooped up in their study bedrooms. But there's also been things like delays in other diagnoses of cancer patients or heart disease patients, not to mention economic effects. So one of my objections to the way the policy was formulated is it seemed to me that the likely ill effects of it were never properly estimated. I think some of these mathematical modellers could have done a rather more useful task if they'd turned their attention to this rather than continually telling us how much disease, in fact, very often we weren't going to get.
Indeed. Just finally, there is this possibility now, a ray of hope, that in England the lockdown will be lifted 2 weeks sooner than we thought because there's going to be a review. Should Mark Drakeford, as First Minister in Wales, also look again in 2 weeks' time? And if the modelling is overtly pessimistic, as it seems to be in England, that he should consider not keeping the lockdown in place for the full 4 weeks?
I mean, my own view is that you need to look at the real figures on the ground. I mean, the former Chief Medical Officer for Wales, Deirdre Hine, did a Cabinet Office review of the management of the 2009 swine flu pandemic. And one of the things she recommended is that politicians and administrative civil servants needed to have, actually, she suggested, lessons so they better understood the limitations of mathematical modelling. I think this is something that would have helped us very much throughout all of this pandemic. And so do I think that Mr. Drakeford ought to look again, depending on what figures he sees in 2 weeks' time or indeed 1 week time? Yes, I do.
Well, that's good advice. And that is advice coming from Dr. Roland Salmon, who is the former regional epidemiologist for Wales. Thanks so much for joining us. So why don't you visit mailplus.co.uk/subscribe to get access to all our podcasts, videos, opinion pieces and more. If you want to get in touch, tweet us at mailplus or me at ToryboyPierce. Fully vaccinated tourists could soon be exempted from quarantine and testing when they return from amber-list countries. The government is indicating that amber-list destinations, which include most of Europe as well as the United States, could effectively go green for people who've been double jabbed. Here to tell us more is Paul Charles. He's chief executive, of course, of the PC Agency and leader of the Quash Quarantine Campaign. Paul, why the change of heart by the government? Is it the sight of all those German tourists flocking to Mallorca and the Spanish beaches and getting first choice in those sunbeds that's done the trick?
Yes, I think it is, Andrew. I think it really is a case of the UK government realising that they would be an outlier whilst summer is enjoyed by citizens of the EU and of the USA. Both of those regions obviously let their citizens who've been travelled without having to return. We know this was the subject of talks at the G7 between various leaders, including President Biden and Boris Johnson. And I think the government here have realized they better act a bit faster. So it's positive news. Obviously, as always, we wait for more detail on it.
Quickly, can it be done, do you think? There should be no real delay, should there?
there shouldn't be any delay. Frankly, it could be introduced now. US citizens are traveling, having had the same jabs as we have. So why shouldn't we? But we know we have a very cautious UK government. I think they will say more at the end of June about their intention to do this, because there's a milestone review due on travel policy on the 28th of June. And they might signal at that point that they're prepared to do this from early August. Now, it's a shame that they won't do it in July, because it means for the travel industry, July is a bit of a washout, a bit like the weather. But it would be a shame if they don't do it till August. But what I'm hearing is it will be early August onwards.
What about children under 18? Because families might want to go abroad to take advantage of this, Paul, to take advantage of at last to get some benefit from the double vaccine. But most people under 18 won't have been jabbed. Do you think children under 18 should be excluded and should be allowed to join their families, their parents?
Well, if logic prevailed, Andrew, then there wouldn't be a need to test children, especially younger children. I mean, some countries have policies where they want children as young as 6 months to be tested, and it really is far too young. I think the problem is we know the UK government is very cautious on this issue. We are seeing infection spreading amongst 8 to 12-year-olds and teenagers as well. So I think testing is to be a key part of travelling over the next year, certainly, and it will stay in place. So sadly, unless the government agrees to be jabbing those under 18, then I think PCR tests are going to be a way of life.
And just finally, Paul, we're all thinking about going to Europe, perhaps taking advantage of this in August, maybe the United States. What about more far-flung countries? What about the Caribbean? Are those sort of places going to be included again?
There are Caribbean islands that should definitely be green. I mean, there's no doubt about it. You only have to look at places like Grenada, very small Caribbean island, beautiful, 120,000 population. They have zero active COVID cases and have had zero cases for some time now. They've only had one death during the COVID pandemic. They know how to manage illness and disease in many of these islands because they're very resilient. It's a fallacy. It's a farce, really, that they have not made it to the green list so far. But I'm confident they will be opening up by early August. And I think that's when we're going to see many more countries accessible, especially for those fully jabbed.
Are you going on holiday, Paul?
We all want to go on holiday as soon as possible, don't we? And leave. I'm hopefully heading to
we
France.
We do. Looking at this rain pouring down.
Yeah.
Where are you going to go to, France?
I'm hopefully heading to the south of France at the end of July. Fingers crossed. But it is amber. So it's not illegal to go to an amber country. So I can definitely go. It just means at the moment I'd have to self-isolate on return. But I've been double jabbed. Of course, I should be given that freedom to come back and not have to quarantine.
Just keep pressurising Grant Shapps, the Transport Secretary. I guess you probably speak to him most days. Keep up the pressure, Paul.
Well, we'll keep the pressure on all government ministers. They need to fall into line with what EU countries are doing and what the US are doing. I'm sure they will come around eventually.
That was Paul Charles, Chief Executive of the PC Agency and leader of the Quash Quarantine Campaign, which certainly now seems to be working. Thanks for joining us. Deputy Sports Editor Matt Gatwood joins me now. Matt, this is the big one, really, for home fans, isn't it, in the Euros? Whether even if England or Wales or Scotland continue to progress, it's England versus the old enemy, Scotland.
Yeah, it's a massive game. They haven't met in tournament football, the two, obviously the oldest enemies in world football. They played the first ever game 149 years ago. And they haven't met in tournament football since Euro 1996, which obviously we've heard a lot about over the last few weeks building up to this game. You know, Gazza, that goal, how he sat Colin Hendry down, David Seaman's penalty save from Gary McAllister's penalty, and whether Yuri Geller indeed moved the ball before he struck it. All these great stories that came out of that game 25 years ago at Euro 96. Well, the next instalment, we've had to wait a long time for it, but it's upon us and it's tonight. Now, in truth, it's a bigger game for Scotland because having lost their first game, they desperately need to win if they want to get out of the group. England, obviously, you know, they won their first game. They could afford a draw. They won't want to lose to Scotland, of course. But England will be going all out to win it. Now, and of course, on paper, you'd fancy England, wouldn't you?
Of course. You're going to make a prediction, Matt?
I will make a prediction. You know, you look at the teams, you know, England have, you know, undoubtedly the better players on the pitch. They played pretty well in their first game against Croatia, maybe not quite as well as they could have done. Scotland played okay in their first game, but didn't manage to. The trouble with Scotland is you just feel they're a little bit toothless in attack, whereas England have got a lot of flair going forward. So I'm going to go for 2-0 to England.
Very good. Now, what's the latest? I love this story about Ronaldo refusing to drink the Coke, and the French player who's Muslim wouldn't touch the beer, even though it was alcohol free. Have UEFA intervened on this?
Yeah, it's a brilliant story, isn't it? It's such good fun. So, yeah, you're right. Ronaldo took the two. When he sat down to do his media duties, there were strategically placed two bottles of Coke in front of him, which he...
So unsubtle, wasn't it? I mean, for God's sake, so unsubtle.
Oh, I know. I know, it's so ugly. But UEFA have now asked players not to do this anymore because they don't want the...
they don't want to lose the sponsors.
Well, exactly, yeah. They don't want to lose
the sponsors. It's all about pound notes, isn't it?
Exactly, and they've reminded the players that this money comes in, and they were very careful in pointing out that the money comes in and it's used for grassroots and youth football and women's football. So they're very clear to make that distinction that it's, by doing this, they could be harming basically grassroots football, taking pitches away from small children and all that sort of stuff. So,
right.
So that's been the reminder that they've sent out.
What does Coca-Cola do for grassroots football? Not a lot.
Well, probably not. But
in terms of, I'm just thinking about the kids drinking it. You know, we've got the most obese country in this. But I mean, I get it. It's business for UEFA, isn't it?
Exactly. And Stanislas Churchasov, the Russia coach, yesterday sat down. There were a couple of bottles of Coke, and he went one better than not moving them. He cracked one open and started to drink it. So UEFA will be delighted with him.
Blimey.
Yeah, very
you
good.
Couldn't make it. Well, Matt, you'll be glued to the screen tonight, won't you? Watching the football.
I will. So will you.
I think I'm working somewhere else actually, but I'll be urging them on, and of course it'll be wall to wall in the paper tomorrow, won't it?
It certainly will. Yeah, we'll have all through the pull out the Euros verdict pull out that we're doing on a daily basis. It'll be all through there and at the back of the book. So there'll be plenty to read.
That's Matt Gatwood, who is, of course, our Deputy Sports Editor here at the Daily Mail. Thanks for joining us. This week, Waitrose announced it's going to relabel a herb in its stores after some complaints its name was a racist slur. Here we go again, I hear people thinking. Kaffir lime leaves, often used in Southeast Asian cooking, are to be relabeled as Makrut lime leaves after the complaints. The Daily Mail's fabulous columnist Jan Moyer has some suggestions of some other products that could be next for a rebrand, and she joins me now. So Jan, what needs to be rebranded?
Well, I think if you're going to go down the route of renaming lime leaves, the shelves are absolutely groaning with things that could cause potential offence. From peaches and plums, let's not go there, to plain flour, which seems to suggest there are other much more attractive flours just around the corner. What about strong white flour? What about black pepper? I mean, there are a million things.
Yeah, black pepper, that could be a problem, couldn't it?
Well, yes, considering that there's white pepper too.
Yeah, yeah. Do you think Waitrose have just overreacted?
Well, I think that, the thing is, this word, kaffir lime, the kaffir, I mean, it is used as an insult in South Africa. It's used elsewhere as an insult for, in Iran, for example, as an unbeliever, someone who doesn't believe in God. But it's rarely used like that in the UK. My issue with it is that it only seems to take one complaint from someone.
Yes, I know.
On an issue that sort of is seen as, I hate to use the word woke now, but on a word that's, on a cause that's seen as woke. And then that's it. The whole, the shelves are stripped. Something is renamed. It's ridiculous.
What is going to happen to French sticks, Jan?
well, I think they're going to have to be rebranded as a long loaf.
Yeah.
But I got lots of emails from readers about this today. Some of them absolutely hilarious. One man saying he was never going to buy thick bleach again. He was going to buy bleach that had a degree. But I did get an email from a Mr. John Charles, who said that he'd gone to his local Waitrose in Newmarket, and there was a fellow shopper, a woman, who was wearing a mask that had the F word on it. Obviously, I'm not going to say it, but it said F Boris. And he found this very offensive. I mean, some people might think this is funny. Some people might not. He found it offensive. He complained in the store. He later complained to Waitrose themselves, who said to him, well, but none of the staff noticed it, so I don't think it's an issue. Now, I think he is perfectly right to be offended by that. But then, you know, I think that's much more offensive than an obscure word for a lime leaf. But it's the issue. Do you know what I mean? It's what,
I do.
What side of the divide that you're on?
I know. And what about gay people like me, who you know are very sensitive, Jan? How are we going to bear it if they continue to sell camp coffee essence?
Well, and French fancies.
It's just so absolutely ridiculous, isn't it?
I think it is. I mean, I think there are much more important things to worry about. I mean, there's the issue. These lime leaves, Waitrose sell them, a tiny amount of them, for £1.80 in plastic tubing. I mean, you would think that people would be much more worried about the green footprint, the plastic that they come packaged in, rather than this sort of rather innocuous name that no one's remotely bothered about in the first place. But no. We are where we are, Andrew.
We are. And I love this, the Surrey sausage. As you say, what about the mental health of those in Guildford and Dorking who might be offended that they've been filled into natural casing in need of preservatives?
I know. Who wants to walk around Dorking being called a sausage? You know, and as a Scotch, you know, I bring up the topic of Scotch bonnet peppers, which are named after a Tam O'Shanter hat, which is part of our national dress. It's so named because it's wrinkled and bright red. And, you know, I mean, I could get offended about that if I chose to, but I don't, Andrew, because there are much more important things to worry about.
But will you ever be able to look at another packet of biscuits called Hobnobs in the same way again?
I'm certainly not going to get close to them.
That is the magnificent, incomparable Jan Moyer on how Waitrose appears, my favourite store, her favourite store, to have become Wokrose. Yeah. Wokrose. That's what we're going to call it, Jan. Wokrose. Thanks for joining us. Well, that's all we've got time for today. For the latest from the Daily Mail, download the Mail Plus app. Every weekday at 5 p.m, you can listen to me all over again. I'm Andrew Pearce. This is The Andrew Pearce Show. The show's back on Monday. Not with me. I'm away. It'll be with Jim White. But have yourselves a great weekend and good night.